Hi everyone, Louisa here. Before we get started with today's episode, we want to give a content warning that our discussion this week deals with how the chapter mentions rape. So if you feel as though you have to skip this one, we totally understand and support that decision. Take care of you, and we hope you tune back in next week. Welcome back, lovers. Here we are for chapter 2 of Danielle Steele's Now and Forever.
Louisa, what happened this week in the book?
Well, if your timer is ready, I can tell you all about it in the Dirty 30.
Okay, ready, go.
Okay, so we come in and we see Jessie and she's on the plane and she's like, oh my God, I miss my husband so much. And she remembers all the times that he's like almost late to pick her up, but makes it in the end. And he's always like rushing in the last minute, but he shows up and he picks her up at the gate because LOL, this is pre-9/11. And so then she also talks about all of her fashion choices and she's wearing this orange suede jacket with some beige suede pants. And I just have a lot of questions about that. And then she talks about how she really, really loves her husband because since her dad died and her mom died and her brother was killed in Vietnam, he's all that she has left. And he like replaces all those people for her. And oh God damn it, I thought I was talking so fast and then I wasn't.
30 seconds is really
fast. It's so short. Tell me what I missed though.
Okay, so he sees her in the airport and is like, you are so tall, like an Amazon woman. And then they embrace and he's like, oh, I would rape you right here if I could. And she's like, why don't you rape me then? And then they go get her luggage and they're like making out and everyone's looking at them. And then they go to Jesse's car and he's trying to convince her that the next day she should skip work and they should just go to the beach. And he says, I'll kidnap you if I have to. Oh, and also earlier when we learn about Jesse's family, she'd like had all these night terrors because they had all died. So she's like really dependent on Ian and like really excited to see him again. And I think that's pretty much it.
Well, thanks. I guess I did leave quite a bit out because apparently I don't really know how time works too well, or I just need to learn how to be more concise. Maybe one day I will figure out how to do the Dirty 30 correctly, but today is not that day. But that does allow me to move into what my favorite moment was. And it actually goes off of what you just ended on, her being super dependent on Ian. My favorite moment is this bit where Jesse is like, I love Ian so much and I just need him so much that I don't even care if he cheats on me as long as he's discreet about it. And yeah, that was actually, I don't know if it was a favorite. It was just a really standout moment for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of standout moments in this chapter. It wasn't a very long chapter, but there is one moment where Jesse is talking about licking Ian's back freckles, which I found very bizarre. And then also definitely the part where she is like, he's like my best friend and my brother because my brother died in Vietnam. And then I was like, okay, there's a lot going on with Jesse.
Oh, yeah. And she also, there's a line where she said, she was his woman and his little girl. I'm like, so is this some weird daddy play issue? Like, what's going on here?
And that's kind of my whole question for this chapter, because I'm like, then we get to the part that I think really stands out to us about this chapter when Ian says, be lucky I didn't rape you right here in the airport. And then that just like shocked me and I screamed, but then Jesse comes back with like, yeah, why don't you just rape me? So I'm like, what kind of like fantasy are they like enacting? Or is this just like, Jesse goes along with it? Like, I just had a lot of questions about that situation.
Right. And like, I don't want to kink shame anyone. If that's your thing, then okay, cool, I guess. I don't get it, but like I don't have to get it because it doesn't have to be for me. But it does bring up a lot of questions, like specifically around consent and control and dominance, you know? Which, could those be our themes?
Could be.
So as a good starting point for talking about dominance as a theme, there was one part that really stood out to me, and it's when Jesse and Ian are having their playful little banter moment, and
he like is making fun of how tall she is, and she's like, "You know, I'm only 5'11." And I'm like, "Hey, represent," because I'm 5'11, and so I really appreciated that. But at the same time, it's like, so we have these tall Aryan-looking people.
Well, and then like going along with their kind of like role playing, he calls her Amazon, which is like just probably not appropriate in this day and age, but like I just meaning like a tall, like it seems like she has this tall
So
presence.
it's funny that you say that because that was actually the nickname I had from one of my ex-boyfriends. So so that
I mean, okay, my understanding is that like Amazon women were like tall, right? But that's still just like kind
Yes,
of
tall and like in
in-ish.
charge and just like warriors and boss ass bitches. So I took it as a compliment because it's all about strength and like I include that as part of my persona, but also it was weird in the context of this book.
Yes, I think that's what confused. It did confuse me because I'm like, okay, it's the 1970s and like he's calling her Amazon, and then she calls him a masher, which I looked up, and that's a fashionable. It can either be a fashionable man in the Victorian era, like a dandy, one of those kind of people, or a man who makes unwelcome advances on women. And there's all these like illustrations of that from like the Victorian era, this kind of like creepy man like looking at a
Ew.
woman's skirt like on the trolley or something. And
Ew.
I was
That's
like, okay, that's
strong,
like
like.
just funny. It's like, okay, in the 70s, did people use that phrase? I guess. But then it's like she's kind of like saying it sexually. So I'm like, I think it still just plays into this like fantasy she has where he like takes advantage of her. Like you said, I'm like, I don't want to shame anyone. But on the same hand, it's like he's allowed to cheat, but she never would. He can kind of take advantage of her and she like thinks it's cool. I don't know. It just like brings up questions.
Yeah, they have just their relationship is very interesting because she talks about while she's on the plane thinking about how much she misses her husband, she talks about how much she loves to spoil him by buying him clothing. And so she is clearly the financially dominant person in the relationship, but he is still the sexually dominant one, which when they when they're play acting, doing this role play and calling each other names. She like playfully smacks him. He's like, "Ooh, don't beat me up." And that's when he calls her an Amazon. Like she's physically intimidating. And she's really offended that he thinks she's physically intimidating. And so she calls him a masher, as in he's taking advantage of women. It's so.
Is this some sort of belated processing of the sexual revolution of the 1960s and women's liberation and the fact that women could be powerful? And so, like, people in heterosexual relationships were trying to redefine or come to a new understanding of each partner's role in the relationship, because that's kind of what it feels like to me. It feels really complicated. But also, like, Jessie's emotional dependency on Ian is sort of just a way to balance the scales because she's so financially independent from him.
Well, I think you like bring up a good point because I think I've had this sort of situation with men where like they seem, and this, I think I also read an article about this at one point that it's like men that seem sort of like dominant in the workforce. And I'm not really saying Ian is, so he might be a bad example, but or like just kind of dominant like in life, then kind of like want to be like taken advantage of a little bit like sexually and like not in like a scary way but sort of in a way of like ooh like yeah intimidate me like tall woman like I feel like I've run into that situation not that I'm tall but like
I do all the time, and it's so weird, and I don't
my
like
recent
it.
ex-boyfriend was like I like women that are taller than me and I was like I'm not taller than you and he was like no it's fine but it's like I think I just have this like presence that's like kind of intense so it's like I think guys kind of gravitate towards that.
But then it's like, but is that actually what you want? Because then when I am my authentic self, who can sometimes be intimidating, they're like, no.
Well, because I think it's like only a sexual thing, I realize. Like it's like only in the context of something relating to sex do they want to be intimidated. But then when it's just like, hey, like I'm gonna tell you my opinion on why like what you just said was sexist, they're like, no.
No. I didn't want you to be that much in charge of yourself.
No. Let me still take care of you. Like, ugh.
So we've already, up to this point, obliquely referenced the part of the chapter where the two characters talk very jokingly about rape, but now we're going to speak more about it in depth.
And we're going to start by reading that passage from the book. So to set the scene, Jesse is on the plane. It has landed, taxied to the gate, the jet bridge has approached, and everyone is preparing to get off of the plane. Three businessmen and a gaggle of women pressed out before her, but she was tall enough to see over the chattering women's heads. He was there at the gate, and she waved as he grinned broadly, waving back, and then he moved swiftly toward her, gently weaving his way through the people ahead of her. Then he had reached her and was taking her in his arms. "It's about time you came home. And looking like that, you'll be lucky if I don't rape you right here." He looked so pleased, and then he kissed her. She was home. "Go ahead, rape me. I dare you." But they stood where they were, drinking each other in, saying it all with their eyes. Jesse couldn't keep a smile from her lips or her hands from his face. "You feel so good." She loved the softness and spiced lemon smell of his skin. "Jesse, if you knew how I missed you." She nodded, knowing she had missed him at least as much. So I want that to sink in, but not too much because it's gross. Anna,
you said that when you first read that line about "I could just rape you right here," and you were so shocked that you screamed. Take me through your emotional journey as you read that line.
I was heating up my lunch and I was like, oh, I'll just read the chapter. You know, sometimes I do that around lunchtime. Like, I'll just read a little bit or whatever. And like, I don't know, I expect a romance novel to be kind of light. Like, obviously I expect there to be sex in it, but not someone saying they're going to rape someone like, while they're in the airport. I was just like, whoa, like was not expecting that. And then I kind of stopped.
And also like not a hero, not the hero character saying that. Like you'd expect that of like the evil nemesis.
I mean, we already knew Ian was like a little bit mysterious and sinister, but I definitely didn't think he was going to say that. And then I just was like, ah, and put the book down. And then when I picked it back up and then read that she was like, okay, then rape me. I was like, okay, now they're both in on it. Like that makes me feel a little better because he's not just like saying something kind of horrifying and then she's just like, what? But I was like, that just makes me like cringe more.
Strong dislike, which maybe we're jumping ahead of ourselves, but the "have you seen this man" portion, this is reminding me, and don't worry folks, I am not about to say, oh, this time that I was raped, because thankfully that is not an experience that I have had. However, this is definitely just the questions of consent are making me think of weird things in the context of dates and relationships I have been on. And amongst my friend group, it is known the story of who I not so affectionately call the foot guy. Well, I will make a very long story short. Essentially, this guy who marketed himself as 5'9", but showed up as 5'6".
Which honestly is like a baffling choice to have made because I'm already at 5'11", being an equal opportunity dater by agreeing to go out with someone who is 5'9". And then for him to just lie and show up even shorter than that, like what did he think he was gonna gain from that? But anyway, he showed up looking strangely like David Spade, but 30 years younger,
and was just really obnoxious and awful. Still managed, I was bored, so I thought I might as well go and have a drink with him anyway.
And honestly, I really could have used your lesson from last week that boredom is not a good reason to do something, especially when it just looks like a bad idea overall.
Classic.
Right, the things, it's one of those moments of like, I got off work and I have somewhere to be in 3 hours and nothing to do until then, so I suppose I will continue this date even though I'm not enjoying it. The thing I had to go to was a friend's going away party, and when I got there, I was very drunk already.
Because this guy had been plying me with alcohol for 3 hours.
I had brought this David Spade lookalike with me.
He looked like David. That's like the worst part, but also the best part.
Brought this David Spade lookalike with me, made a complete ass of myself at my friend's going away,
drank a little bit more, and then the next thing I know,
came to in the back of a taxi, and this David Spade man was sucking on my toes. And mind you, I had been wearing sneakers that day, and so he had like taken my shoes off and my socks and like tucked the socks inside the shoes, which actually was very considerate. Thank you for not losing my socks. But
You know, in retrospect, that actually made a lot of sense because, like, his first message to me, because of course we met on an app, his first message to me was, are you more of a flip-flops or a high heels girl? And, like, I genuinely thought he was trying to ascertain something about my personality. Like, am I laid back or am I high maintenance? But, like, no, he just literally wanted to know what was on my feet. But anyway, like, back to the story at hand.
That was still, like, a very violating and not consensual moment of, like, I was unconscious because I drank too much and you chose to suck on my toes. That's
taxi driver doing. Were they just like,
what? Driving his fucking taxi up the West Side Highway? I don't know. Like, okay, like, it was very strange. And once I, like, came to and realized what was happening, I kicked this dude out of the taxi and then drunkenly asked the cabbie to drive me the rest of the way home. But I'm able to laugh about that story because to me, my feet are not sexual objects. I don't have a foot fetish. Like, anyone who does, that's totally cool. Do your thing. But make sure that before you suck on someone's toes, you have their consent. You have their permission that they're, like, into it too, or at least into making you happy. Like, I was not consenting to that.
Like, I feel like asking for consent is, like, perhaps a learned behavior for all of us. I'm not even trying to, like, make it gendered in this situation, but it's like, I feel like men either really go overboard with asking for your consent or they, like, don't know. Like, I'm just like, isn't there, like, a medium where you could just ask and it's, like, fine? Like, I feel like I've been in so many situations where, like, similarly, like, I've been too drunk or, like, whatever, and then I'm kind of just, like, confused about what's happening and, like, if I have offered my consent. But, like, then I feel like on the other hand, there's people that will just be like, okay, do I have your consent to remove your sock? Like, do I have your consent to remove? And I'm like, that's, like, just as annoying to me. So I'm like,
it's difficult because working in education and trying to teach young people about consent, it's like, no, you do want to, like, lean towards the asking too much because that's better than not asking at all. And I don't want to say because I feel like there have been so many tweets by men who are like, well, now I can't do anything because I don't know if... It's like, no, sir, you should know. Ask. Or, like, if you are both into it in the moment, then, like, double check on that. But also, if someone is passed out drunk, just, like, the general rule in the consent teaching community is, like, if someone is drunk, they are not consenting. If someone is unconscious, they are not consenting. And so, like, that should not have been a question or an issue. But it's, gross. So, yeah, I have seen this man. Ugh, gross. I don't like it. And he looks like David Spade. I'm sure David Spade is a lovely man. And I used to watch his shows all the time when I was, like, 10. But that didn't mean I wanted to date him. So... I'm sorry, David Spade.
He probably doesn't suck on people's toes like his lookalike, though.
Yeah. Or he might, but I hope that he asks for permission first or, like, makes sure that they're down with it. Exactly. Or at least conscious. Like,
well, the other thing that's interesting to me about consent is that I think what, like, scares guys a lot of the time, because I feel like I've also just, like, been with, like I said, like, a lot of really nice guys that are just like, may I remove my cardigan, like, type guys. Like, wait, my favorite is that I was hooking up with a guy once. I will not name any names, but if they ever listen, they'll probably know it's them. And he was like, may I remove my sweater? And I was like, sure. But then he, like, had a turtleneck on underneath it. And I was like, okay, so is this going to be, like, a bit? Like, may I remove my turtleneck? And then there's, like, another shirt. I was like, okay, can we, like, get going here?
You can just go ahead and just, can I get naked? Yes, take it all
yes,
off.
Yes, okay, like, good. No, like, we need to get to it. But what I was going to say is, like, I feel like, and also this was, like, with my most recent ex, too, and, like, my other ex, who were both, like, super nice, like, they were like, oh, like, I think guys that, like, do really think about consent end up being the ones to kind of worry about, like, if they've ever done anything against someone's consent without knowing it. Like, I feel like there's, like, this kind of, like, weird paranoia where I'm like, a lot of the people that, like, have done things without people's consent don't realize it or don't care,
aren't even aware of it,
thinking of
it, you know what I mean? So it's like, and the people who worry about it the most are probably fine.
Exactly. And I'm like, it's just, like, the anxiety about it. But it's, like, fascinating to kind of see, like, And I mean, anyone can violate someone's consent, but I think especially in this like day and age and like the Me Too movement, all of that, it's like just fascinating to like see men kind of like go through this collective moment of like, did I once do something that could have been constrained? It's like, yeah, like I think you do need to have that experience of like understanding like what boundaries are and like thinking about if you've ever crossed them. I don't know, maybe you haven't, but it's still important just because I think like every woman I know has a story about someone like violating a boundary.
Oh, absolutely. Like the foot guy is definitely my funniest, most amusing story. And like I said,
I am perfectly happy laughing about it
because I don't think of my feet as sexual parts of my body. And so it wasn't, I guess, yes, I could call that a sexual assault, but that's not how I name it because to me, there was nothing sexual about it. It was absolutely a crossing of a line and a boundary breaking, and I didn't consent to that. And so that was gross and I did not like it. But I can laugh because I personally think feet are funny. So if it had been any other part of my body, it would have been a lot more upsetting, I think.
Yeah.
So not every person can like joke about having like something done to them non-consensually. And yeah, I don't know where I was going with that other than I'm not that upset about it, but I have every right to be upset if I wanted to be.
But enough about me. Let's bring it back to the book with a reality check. How realistic is the inclusion of this weird rape fantasy in this book?
I don't know, but it's like, I think if Danielle Steele wrote this book today, she would not, I don't know if she would put a rape fantasy in it. Yeah, I don't know. Because I know people still have them, obviously, like still a thing, but
I think it's also for this couple, for Jesse and Ian, like we already know that they've been married for 7 years.
So the implication is that this is not
a new sexual encounter for them. And I'm not saying that like, because obviously sexual assault can occur within a marriage. Like that happens.
Of course.
But we can also, I think we're meant to assume that whatever sexual playfulness is between them is like something they've already worked out with each other over the past 7 years of being married. And so if this is their play, then this is something that I guess like the consent is implied, which like we're not supposed to imply consent anymore. We're supposed to ask for it. But I think in this story, in this moment, this is supposed to be seen as like, oh, this is just how they interact with each other. This is their jam.
Well, yeah. And I think because like that's why I think if it was now, like I just don't even think Danielle would try to like tackle that subject. I'd be interested to read one of her like more recent books. But I'm like, I think in this day and age, if you're going to like do something like that, because I mean, Ian's not actually raping her. Do you know what I mean? It'd be one thing if he like raped her in the airport or whatever. And it was like, OK, what? Like he's just saying something, which is still like it could still be construed not in like a favorable way, obviously. But I think Danielle was just kind of like, oh yeah, this is like what they do, like you're saying, but it's like in this day and age, I think she would still face like scrutiny from people just because like it's different. So it's interesting to kind of think about that.
And also because there's no like lead up to it. It just drops out of nowhere in this chapter. Like if we had had a little bit more introduction, like, oh God, I read 50 Shades of Grey years and years and years ago, but like we sort of knew what we were going into with that.
Right. We didn't know it. They were just in the airport.
Right. This was just a surprise. Danielle did not have my consent to drop this in out of nowhere.
Danielle, you do not have our consent. Like, she's like, I don't give a shit. Imagery, I'm rich.
Danielle, please don't sue us either.
Yeah, no, Danielle, we love you. So, you know. Yeah. Even though this was written in the 70s, it's like, I think Danielle Steele's like created an interesting dynamic here because there's just so many different like intricacies. And I think just learning about how like not only did Jesse's brother die in Vietnam, but then both her parents died like within a month of each other or something. I'm just like, oh, then she like relies on him even more. Like,
this woman needs therapy. She needs some grief counseling. She doesn't need a husband.
I know. And then like he calls her grief hysteria. I was like, that's not appropriate. Mm-mm. Like, I don't know. People seem to just talk more openly about mental health and going to therapy and stuff in this day and age. So I imagine it was like normal. Oh, yeah, of course. That, I don't know. I'm just like, I feel like if someone was like, oh, hysteria, like now people would be like, oh, I don't think so.
Right. Like, I think that nowadays people are more aware of the history of that word, of understanding that hysteria is very gendered and very misogynist to its root. Like it came out of people thinking that the womb was wandering around the body instead of sitting in its rightful place and doing what it needed to do. And that, like, it could also be caused by demonic or satanic possession. And it was all a way of saying that women who weren't doing what society was thought they should be doing, like getting married and having children, or just being upset at their unfair lot in life and acting out on it, that, like, there was something intrinsically wrong with their uterus. And so because it's based in the uterus, it's like an issue that only women have. Only women can be this irrational. It's bullshit.
I know. It kills me because I feel like it's like women are aware of the fact that we get irrational sometimes, like before our period because of the hormones, but men are just like, oh, LOL, like I'm cool, and then like punch a hole in a wall. Like that's not like rational.
And part of that is that our very valid issues are dismissed as hysteria, just like her very valid grief is dismissed as hysteria. Like, oh, we must be on your period. It must be showing up. So that's why you're so upset that your whole entire family died.
Right. Is it your period or did your whole family die? I don't know.
So women's issues being dismissed as invalid apparently is an evergreen topic, 1970s to 2021. What else?
Oh, and then just also, I mean, I think we talked about this for a second, but like the assumption that men will cheat, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I have never been cheated on, so maybe I'm lucky, but I'm just sort of like, that just seems like the sort of weird gendered sexist thing that's like, okay, because yeah. Men can't control themselves. Like, it goes back to last week. I'm just like, no, anyone can control themselves. Like, that's the whole part of rape culture where people are like, oh, but what was she wearing? He couldn't control him. No, everyone's a person that has control over their functions, unless for some reason they don't.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, her whole thing was, this was what my parents' relationship was like, and it was great. It's like, was it? Did you ask your mom if she was okay with her husband cheating, or are you just assuming that it was okay? And why is, it's just that trope of women always looking for replacements for their father.
I know.
Of like, you want the same kind of man as your father was. Like, nope, that's false. That seems unhealthy.
I know. Well, once again, it's like, Jessie, you got to get some therapy. Like, I think she could really work through some of that. You know, if she had someone besides Ian who's just like eating a cannelloni and cheating on her.
I know, but like she might get that in 2021 if the book were written now, except for, you know, like people still cheat and people still have daddy issues, but at least therapy is real. Anna, any final thoughts for this week's reality check?
Well, I think the obvious is that she's on the plane, like waiting to get off. And then she goes into the airport and sees Ian. And the whole time I was just like, man, like, I wish I was sitting on a plane. Like, I wish I was flying home. I'm like, I've been home forever. I've been home for almost a year. Like, the pandemic continues. So I think that was at least kind of took me out of the like intense sexual vibes of this chapter. Not that those weren't amusing too, but I was like, oh, to travel.
But also just like the missing being able to touch and hold someone.
It's so shocking to like think about how, because I think some people just don't like to hug or like don't really care. And I'm like, I'm definitely not one of those people. So I like have hugged maybe like 5 people in the past year. I can count it on like one hand. And I'm like, that's just shocking because I hug everyone normally if they're my friend, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who have I hugged this year? I've hugged my mom and one of my roommates when she was having a really horrible day. And then one other friend because we decided it was safe.
Nice. And the only people I've hugged are like my family, my ex-boyfriend, and my ex-boyfriend's mom, and like some of his family, probably.
Well, that's really depressing. So let's think about something fun, such as our next segment, Fashion Forward.
I went through my book and highlighted all of the places in this chapter where fashion was talked about. And so let's just do a quick little recap. So she's talking about her spring line: soft pastels, gentle wool cuts on the bias, creamy plaids, silk shirts with full sleeves, and some marvelous suedes. And that gave me a lot. I was getting a lot of visuals in my mind. And then, of course, we learn about her bright orange suede coat that she wore over beige suede pants and a print silk shirt in shades of caramel.
I'm just like, first of all, I don't think like beige and orange are like colors I enjoy. So I'm just seeing like a very 70s palette, which like tracks, but at the same time is like just not something I want to look at.
Oh yeah, and that orange coat especially, it's like described as a burnt caramel bordering on flame. That is a very specific color. I would not put that on my body.
No, absolutely not. I like, my mom's house where I am has, every room has like a very brightly colored wall, but like, would I wear clothes in the colors of the walls? Probably not.
Yeah, that would be a really bold choice. But then Jessie is thinking to herself.
And she mentions the Pierre Cardin blazer that she bought for Ian. And so I did not know who that was. I'm like, oh, probably some 70s designer.
And so I started Googling this man, and wow, he is fascinating. Also, by the way, rest in peace. He just passed away in December. Huge loss to the fashion world. But this man, there's honestly nothing he didn't do.
Wasn't he in Emily in Paris? I think that's why I'm thinking about him.
Oh, I don't know. I don't watch TV shows about skinny white girls. But anyway, so I did a Wikipedia deep dive on him because I love being a huge old nerd, and I found out so much interesting stuff. So he did some really avant-garde fashion, my favorite of which is the pagoda shoulder jacket. Definitely look that up. I'm going to put a pic on the IG.
But he like designed spacesuits for NASA, which influenced the Star Trek costumes, and he designed suits for the Beatles, and he made like the bubble dress. And a lot of conservatives are really mad about him because they think he destroyed the morals of Christianity via fashion, and I think that's hilarious.
But I could go on and on about my newfound favorite designer, but I'm not going to. I'm going to put it all on the Instagram and save the deep dives for that. So everyone should follow it and check that out. In the meantime, Anna, what's next?
All right. So we're going to talk about lessons learned from this week's chapter. So Louisa, what is one lesson you're going to take away from chapter 2 of this book?
Oh, okay. So I mentioned it before, and as I'm looking through my chapter, where I wrote the most in the margins was this whole part where she is talking about how she doesn't have friends anymore. She's like, in the 7 years they'd been married, she had lost track of most of her close women friends in New York and hadn't replaced them with others in San Francisco. She didn't need women friends, a confidant, a best friend. She had Ian. And I'm like, oh, that's a lot. No. So then they get into a whole codependency thing, and it's very strange. And she's like, it doesn't bother me if he cheats, and I don't like any of that. So the lesson I'm learning is that I should not ever let a man become my everything. I am still a person with other relationships, and I should maintain those friendships so that I don't become completely dependent on a man who might not even respect my boundaries, who might not even respect our relationship if we've agreed to a monogamous one. Because if you have no one else, you're going to be a lot more tolerant of bullshit and being treated badly. And I don't want that for me. So that's my lesson. How about you?
Yeah, jumping off of what you said, I think the lesson I've learned is that first of all, I'll preface this with saying my whole family has not died. So I don't know what that experience would be like. And especially her brother was like 19 or however old and died in Vietnam. So that's very traumatizing. However, I don't think I would stay with a man just because I'm sad and my whole family died. That just seems like time for me to go to therapy. So I think I would seek out therapy in that situation and make sure that I was really doing what was best for me.
Good. I think these are good lessons. Yes.
Yes.
Look at us developing as human beings and thinking about relationships responsibly.
It's funny because new information comes out on relationships like every year. Like in the 90s, it was like women are from Venus and men are from Mars. And everyone was like, what was that book about? Like, so, you know, we got to evolve with the times.
Absolutely. Speaking of planets, Venus and Mars, that is such a seamless and beautiful transition. Channeling Channy. So I remember, like, when I first read it, I absolutely texted you about Jessie and how she's so controlling and is very predictable and hates change. And I was like, oh my gosh, this 100% makes her a Capricorn. You're so right.
She really is. And especially, I think the line that really jumped out to me this week was when she was talking about, like, it's just me and Ian and, like, this and that. And then she was like, and a baby would be a variable. I was like, only an earth sign would call a baby a variable. Like, other signs would be like, oh, like, I love kids. Or like, oh, not my vibe. But like, okay. She was like, a baby is a variable. Like, it's so cold. It's like mathematical. Like, very bizarre. Very Capricorn. And then absolutely. I thought Ian... He's like, had a lot of anxiety about the airport when she was just like, he's always on time and he's like looking for parking and like this and that. And I was like, that just like still strikes me as very water sign, like making sure he's like there and going along with his whole behavior from last week. I'm still sticking by him being a Scorpio. That just feels right.
Okay. All right. And what do you think is coming next week?
I'm curious. We didn't really talk about this, but like they're talking about the car still, like, and how she was like, oh, it's so clean, like what happened? So I know Jesse's gonna find out that he cheated on her with this woman. And going along, Louisa, with what you said last week about like there being some connection there with that woman, like there's gonna be some way the three of them all relate. I still think that, because I'm like, okay, Jesse doesn't care if he cheats, quote unquote, or is used to it, but it's like something about this specific woman is gonna be different and it's gonna like come back to bite them.
Yes, yes, yes. I 100% agree. And especially because of
the way that the chapter ends, when she's like, I don't know what you did all day. I'm sure you found something. And he's like, nothing much. Meh, meh. And like, no, we know exactly what you did. You went and slept with another woman. So, yes, obviously, I mean, there wouldn't be a book if she never found out. Clearly, this is all building up to a plot where this comes out and is messy. Otherwise, the book would be over. Like, he cheated and his wife was cool with it. The end of story.
Classic, like, dramatic structure. I don't write fiction, but in screenplays and TV and playwriting, there's always, like, the inciting incident or, like, why is this day different than other days? So it's like, yeah, this is the day he cheated with someone that's going to, like, cause repercussions in a different way that it hasn't before. You know, it's like, I know where that's going, like, structurally.
Exactly. I think... So specifically, that's like a long term, obviously she's going to find out, but specifically for next chapter, what I think is going to happen, because he's trying, at the end of this chapter, he's trying to convince her to not go into work. I think that she is going to go into work, and so we can see a little bit more of her world.
Yeah.
And establish her more as the future victim of the situation. And then maybe red-haired Maggie might come into the shop.
Yeah, I was thinking that. But, like, she knows, somehow she knows who Jesse is, or, like, knows those.
Yeah.
Wife. Yeah. But, yeah. Like, then she doesn't, then Jesse doesn't know, and then they, blah, blah, yeah. It will all play out.
So that's what I think. I think Maggie is going to show up to Jesse's little boutique, and claws are going to come out, or maybe not. Or maybe Maggie is just going to say some like snarky shit that we know what it means, but Jesse doesn't because she doesn't understand what's happening, but she's going to start to understand and it's going to be a drama.
That's what I think. I feel like I'm just viewing this in like reality TV lens right now. I'm like, but she's going to come in. Like, I don't know. I think I've just been watching too much reality TV, but I'm like, this really strikes me. Like Danielle Steele would be a good writer for reality TV. Like,
ooh, yes. Let's get her in a writer's room for something that's unscripted, quote unquote.
She would just be like, what's going on? I just want to write a book in my castle or wherever she lives in France.
I would believe it if it were a castle. I want that for her. And with that, I guess that's it for this week. Chapter 2 of Danielle Steele's Now and Forever. Join us next week when we read Chapter 3. We have no idea what will happen, but I hope it features a catfight in a 1970s boutique.
Thanks for listening to Hearts of Steel. Today's episode was produced and edited by Louisa Rorschach and distributed via Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. For historical deep dives, photos from the 70s, and other bonus content, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Hearts of Steel Podcast. If you're in love with our readings of romance, please tell your friends and cool mom family members about us and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcast apps.